political analyst joining us from Brussels. Also, thanks to human rights lawyer and peace activist Daniel Kovalik joining us from Pittsburgh. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here, we enlighten you with the Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirzad Waqifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa ma takunu fi sha'nin wa ma tatlu وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَلَا تَعْمَلُونَ مِنْ عَمَلٍ إِلَّا كُنَّا عَلَيْكُمْ شُهُودًا وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب وما يعلم يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Quran, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth, or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater, but it is in a clear book.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel's savage strikes on the Gaza Strip claim the lives of hundreds of Palestinian children as the death toll exceeds 1,500. Iran's foreign minister says resistance access may open new fronts against Israel if regime's war crimes continue in the besieged Gaza Strip. And pro-Palestine activists hold more rallies across the world in solidarity with the people of Gaza, accusing Israel of genocide. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. Now the death toll from Israel's savage attacks on the Gaza Strip continues to rise as the regime carries out early morning strikes on besieged Palestinian territory. According to Gaza's health ministry, more than 1,500 Palestinians have been killed since these attacks began on a Saturday. Around 800 have been women and children. Thousands have also been injured, while more than 420,000 Gazans have been displaced. Israeli military says it's called on all residents in Gaza City to evacuate their homes and head south of the territory. Military says it will continue to operate significantly in the city in the following days. In the meantime, human rights groups have confirmed the regime has used white phosphorus munitions in attacks on Gaza. Territory remains under Israel's complete siege with no access to electricity, water, food, and medicine. Israel started this onslaught after Gaza-based resistance groups launched a multi-front operation against the regime. Palestinian resistance groups have launched more rockets toward the occupied territories as the Israeli death toll rises to over 1,300. Hamas resistance movement says rockets were fired toward Tel Aviv in response to killing of civilians in Gaza. According to Israeli media, multiple rockets fell in northern Israel, including Netanya and Hadera. The southern cities of Beersheba, Ashkelon, and Ashdod have also been targeted. Sirens also sounded in the city of Sderot. Retaliatory operations come as Israel has been massing troops and tanks near the Gaza fence, possibly getting ready for a ground invasion. Israel has used internationally banned white phosphorus bombs in its strikes on Gaza's Karama neighborhood. Over 2 million Palestinians are currently trapped in the Gaza Strip, which is known as the world's biggest open-air prison. Author and journalist Robert Fantina says Israel's brutal bombardment of Gaza is proof regime never wanted to give any concessions to Palestinians and will never.
Riyadh is not going to be in any rush now to normalize relations with Israel following this barbaric genocidal action against the people in Gaza. This is collective punishment. It's a violation of international law. Starving people, preventing them from getting water. These are crimes against humanity, and the Israeli regime is performing them on a daily basis, committing them on a daily basis, and the rest of the world is, or most of the world is silent. The Arab nations that you've mentioned need to speak up very forcibly, very strongly, and support the people of Gaza and oppose the Zionist regime. Those countries that have normalized relations need to sever ties, because this is not what their people have ever wanted. And now with this latest murderous genocidal onslaught, this is stronger than ever, an indication that the Zionist entity is not going to give an inch to the Palestinian people, that when other Arab nations normalize these relations, it's usually with the thought or the belief that there will be some concessions made. There are going to be no concessions made. There never were. Israel has never wanted that, has never intended it, and has no intention of doing it. The only thing Israel will understand is force in the form of sanctions and international condemnation.
Israeli forces and settlers have killed 5 more Palestinians during violent raids across the occupied West Bank. According to Palestinian media, regime forces fatally shot a 17-year-old teenager in Qalqilya. They first shot him in the back and then prevented his transport to a hospital. 2 women were killed by Israeli forces in separate incidents in Ramallah. Israeli settlers also shot and killed a Palestinian man and his son in an ambush south of Nablus. New fatalities bring number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank since Saturday to 36, and nearly 700 have been wounded. Investigative journalist Asa Winston-Lee from London comments on how the Western media distorts the truth about the crimes of Israel against the Palestinians.
Well, the context I'm working in is the West. The Western media we're seeing at the moment is particularly untrustworthy on the issue of Palestine, especially. The Western media has been putting out all kinds of atrocity propaganda, essentially, from Israel, and, you know, unverifiable and highly dubious and often anonymous Israeli sources. And we're seeing, and these disinformation stories are a way for the Palestinian resistance to be delegitimized in the West. And so the context of the British media and the Western media in general, when it covers the issue of Palestine, is always missing the actual reality on the ground and the real history and the immediate history. And even the last year, for example, is always missing. So, for example, it's never mentioned or very rarely mentioned in the Western media that even before the start of Al-Aqsa flood operation on Saturday, around 250 Palestinians have been killed this year, a record number of killings by the Israeli occupation forces in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And so we can see that, you know, the idea that this operation by the resistance forces came out of nowhere is a really misleading one. And even deeper than that, the actual fundamental cause of violence in Palestine is missing the fact that Palestinians were driven out of their homeland by force, by violence, by massacres, even by rapes in some instances by Israeli and Zionist forces.
Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister says if Israel's war crimes continue against Palestinians, it is possible for the resistance axis to open new fronts against the regime. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark upon arrival in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. He added that displacing thousands of Palestinians and cutting off their access to water, electricity, food, and medicine, and are organized war crimes committed by the Israeli regime. Amir Abdullahian stressed continuation of such crimes may elicit reactions from other parts of the resistance axis. He said the Israeli regime and its backers will be responsible for the consequences of their crimes. Before his trip to Lebanon, Amir Abdullahian had met with Iraq's Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani in Baghdad. And now we're going to take you to Yemen, where there seems to be a huge procession that is a pro-Palestinian protest in Sada'a, Yemen, taking place. Thousands of Yemenis, and they've been out in scores since the resistance retaliatory operation Al-Aqsa Flood commenced a few days ago. We've seen huge support out of Yemen and a number of other Muslim countries. We've seen huge protests also throughout Europe. I mean, pro-Palestine and Palestinian activists and protesters have been out in a number of countries, mostly Muslim, but then nevertheless European countries as well. And there's been a lot of blowback with respect to the restrictions throughout Europe when it comes to pro-Palestinian protests. We know in pro-Palestinian demonstrations have encountered various restrictions and bans, raising concerns about freedom of expression and assembly throughout Europe. The Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, caused a stir recently by suggesting that waving the Palestinian flag or chanting freedom slogans specific to Palestine may not be legal when done with the intention of quote-unquote glorifying terrorist acts. You can come out and support the Israeli regime and yell death to Arabs or whatever you want in UK streets, but you say, you mentioned the rights of Palestinians, the slaughter of Palestinian women and children, and she doesn't believe that it could be legal. She also stressed the importance of considering the context, she said, in which symbols are used during anti-Israel demonstrations. Those civil liberties advocates view her directive as a threat to the fundamental rights and freedoms. And then also Paris, we're seeing blowbacks by the French government. The Paris Police Department banned two upcoming pro-Palestine demonstrations, citing concerns for public order. Now, they have still taken place regardless in Paris, Lyon, Marseille, despite these bans, with the reports that police are using tear gas to disperse protesters, Palestinian protesters there in Marseille, in Lyon, in Germany. A solidarity rally with Palestine scheduled in Berlin was not allowed, once again, due to concerns about public safety, as the government put it there. They blocked the event, raising questions about the right to peaceful assembly in support of Palestine. Protests have started to commence in the Iranian capital as well. Iranian capital Tehran, scores of people from all walks of life have poured out into the streets in support of the Palestinian people and in condemnation of Israeli atrocities, which the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the Arab League, and a number of Arab leaders and world leaders have said, and the United Nations have said, there's genocide taking place against the people of Gaza. There are war crimes, crimes against humanity, all illegal humanitarian crimes against illegal under humanitarian law, under international law. What is taking place in the besieged enclave? We've covered dozens of protests with respect to pro-Palestinian demonstrations taking place throughout the world. Right now, my producer notified me she wants to bring you guys a soundbite from authorities there in the besieged Gaza Strip with respect to the humanitarian situation that is unfolding in Gaza.
It's a dire situation in the Gaza Strip that we're seeing evolve, with food and water being in limited supply and quickly running out. WFP's on the ground and is responding, and we're providing food to thousands of people that have sought shelter in schools and elsewhere across the territory. But we're going to run out very soon. We don't have access to the Gaza Strip that's been closed down. We're looking to ensure that we can have means to deliver to these people as the crisis evolves.
That was a soundbite from the besiege Gaza Strip, saying that it's just indescribable the humanitarian toll it's taken on Gaza in 6 days of relentless Israeli bombardment of the besieged enclave taking place morning, day, and night. And it's resulted in over 1,500 deaths of Gazans. And the Israeli regime says it is just getting started. Said it's told multiple towns of northern Gaza to evacuate to the south of the besieged enclave. We know it's just a little over 300 square kilometers. It's a relatively small piece of land, Gaza is, and it's occupied by over 2.3 million people. So you can imagine, without telling half the population to flee south, it's already a tight squeeze. And now to tell people to basically huddle to the south of the besieged enclave there because they want to carpet bomb the north is, I don't know what it is really, but we know there is no water, no electricity, no medicine, no food in the besieged Gaza Strip. Now, leader Iran's Islamic Revolution described as destructive, quick, recent anti-Israel operation by Palestinians. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the operation has devastated some of the fundamental structures of the occupying regime. He called it irreparable defeat for Israel in terms of intelligence and the military. Ayatollah Khamenei made those comments after Palestinian resistance fighters launched a surprise attack against Israel.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Israel will receive a heavier slap for the regime's ongoing massacre of the Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip. The leader emphasized that the Gaza massacre will bring a greater calamity to the Zionists after they suffered, quote, an irreparable failure both in terms of military and intelligence. Ayatollah Khamenei further described as a destructive quake the anti-Israel operation launched by Palestinians. He said those who blame the operation on non-Palestinians are making mistakes. The leader underlined that the damage inflicted on Israel in the surprise operation by Palestinians is the result of the regime's own actions. Ayatollah Khamenei said the brave move by Palestinians was a response to years of Israeli crimes. The leader said Israel is now playing the victim card and that Western media outlets are helping the regime in this regard. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the regime cannot be portrayed as an oppressed entity while it is actually a monster. He warned Israel and its backers that the bloodshed of Palestinians will bring them greater calamity. The leader said the Israeli regime is playing the victim card in order to double down on its oppression and justify its attack on people's houses, attack on civilians, and its massacre and mass killing of Gazans.
Pro-Palestine activists are holding more rallies across the world to express solidarity with the people of Gaza as Israel presses ahead with its deadly strikes on the territory. In the U.S. city of New York, students gathered in front of a public university to voice support for Palestinians. Protesters called Israel an apartheid entity accusing the regime of committing genocide in the Gaza Strip. They said Israel is responsible for decades of tragic bloodshed across occupied territories and beyond. Elsewhere in the Tunisian capital, Tunis, people took to the streets and expressed support for Palestinians in Gaza. Thanks for tuning in and goodbye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
the supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans. And muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
In the limelight.
According to a study from a Michigan-based research firm, an ongoing strike carried out by tens of thousands of auto workers has cost the U.S. economy billions of dollars. Denying workers their wages and cutting output at car manufacturing facilities. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. France Press, AFP, has covered this story and tells us more. The United Auto Workers announced employees at United States automaker Mack Trucks voted down a labor agreement on Sunday, 8th of October, and will join some 25,000 other union members on strike. The union posted on social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter, "The United Auto Workers members at Mack Trucks have voted to reject the tentative agreement and will strike in the coming days." The Post said this will impact 4,000 employees at Mack, a maker of industrial vehicles, which is headquartered in North Carolina, but has manufacturing facilities in Pennsylvania and Maryland. The United Auto Workers president, Sean Fain, said, "I'm inspired to see United Auto Worker members at Mack holding out for a better deal and ready to stand up and walk off the job to win it." The Mack workers will be joining striking United Auto Workers members at the so-called Big Three, General Motors, Ford and Stellantis, who launched a targeted action on 15th of September after failing to reach a new deal. The targeted strike called for stoppages at a handful of plants, whilst leaving most of the union's 146,000 hourly auto workers on the job. After 2 weeks of expanding the strike to other plants, Sean Fain on Friday, 6th of October, said the United Auto Workers will hold off for now, claiming last-minute progress in talks. With the dual earlier expansions of the strike on the prior two Fridays, the total number of workers on strike at the Big Three stands at about 25,000. The industrial action is the first ever joint strike at the three major automakers in a push for higher salaries and other improvements, especially relating to transition to the manufacture of electric vehicles. In a letter to Mack posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, the United Auto Workers cited wage increases, cost of living adjustments and several benefits as outstanding issues in their contract negotiations. CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Detroit's Big Three automakers are furloughing or laying off thousands of non-union employees amid a bitter standoff with striking members of the United Auto Workers. Ford Motor recently furloughed 330 workers in Chicago and Lima, Ohio, adding to the 600 workers the automakers laid off last month at an assembly plant in Wayne, Michigan. General Motors GM, which on Tuesday, 4th of October, reported a 21% increase in sales for its third quarter earnings, has laid off more than 2,100 workers across four states. Stellantis, the parent company of Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep and Ram, has idled nearly 370 workers, including 68 workers in Perrysburg, Ohio. The United Auto Workers on 29th of September expanded its nearly three-week-old strike to target GM's Lansing Delta Township assembly plant in Delta, Michigan, which manufactures the Chevrolet Traverse, the Buick Enclave. Ford workers at the Chicago plant make the Explorer and the Lincoln Aviator. Automakers say the furloughs and layoffs are a result of the United Auto Workers strike, which has now entered its fourth week. In a recent statement to CBS News that confirmed the furloughs, General Motors said, "It is unfortunate that the United Auto Workers' decision to call a strike at GM Lansing Delta Township Assembly Plant continues to have negative ripple effects. The impacted team members are not expected to return until the strike has been resolved. Since we're working under an expired labor agreement, there are no provisions for company-provided subpay in this circumstance." The automakers also said that a lengthy strike will lead to more layoffs for people who work at auto parts suppliers. Liz Dorr, Ford's chief supply chain officer, said recently, "We understand to date there are about 2,400 supplier employees that have been laid off," adding that if the strike is prolonged, there could be anywhere between 325,000 to 500,000 employees that could be laid off. The United Auto Workers has criticized the automakers' move to lay people off, with the union chief Sean Fain saying last month that the Big Three automakers are using their layoffs as a tactic to put the squeeze on our members. The United Auto Workers launched a coordinated strike last month, with nearly 13,000 auto workers walking off their job at the Big Three assembly plants in Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio. The website of ABC News has also covered this story and tells us more. According to a study from a Michigan-based research firm, an ongoing strike carried out by tens of thousands of automakers has cost the U.S. economy billions of dollars, denying workers their wages and cutting output at car companies. Over its first 2 weeks, the strike cost workers $325 million in lost wages, whilst imposing more than $1 billion in manufacturing declines at the big three U.S. automakers, General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis. Stellantis owns Jeep and Chrysler. The report said, accounting for additional costs to suppliers, dealers, and consumers, the strike caused a total of nearly $4 billion in economic losses over its first 2 weeks. The work stoppages has grown steadily since its launch last month. After the strike began, Ford laid off 600 workers who assembled cars at a plant in Michigan on the same day. A company spokesperson told ABC News, workers in the paint department at the nearby plant are out on strike, leaving the assembly workers without adequate parts since the parts require paint before they can be put together into cars. A week later, approximately 5,625 additional United Auto Workers members at 38 car parts suppliers walked off their job. The union has carried out what it has called a stand-up strike, announcing a new set of strike targets shortly before thousands of additional workers are set to walk off their jobs. Anderson Economic Group CEO Patrick Anderson said in a statement, suppliers were particularly hard hit by the United Auto Workers' strategy of announcing specific plants to be struck just hours before they were shut down. The shutdown of 38 parts distribution centers also crimped dealership service operations and, of course, caused more United Auto Workers to lose their wages.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Midstream.
Today, the Palestinian revival is the most prepared it has ever been. The Zionist regime will collapse with the support of the Palestinian people and the resistance forces in the region. This is what came in Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei's speech last week in a meeting with the guests of the Islamic Unity Conference. Lo and behold, a few days later, the world witnessed the epic Al-Aqsa flood operation. The land, sea, and air invasion of Israeli settlements in the Gaza Strip, the firing of more than 5,000 rockets towards the occupied territories, the failure of the Iron Dome, and the reported results so far, the capture of Israeli soldiers, the death of at least 700 Israeli occupation soldiers and settlers, and the injury of more than 2,100 others to the writing of this report. In short, it was a flood, the Al-Aqsa flood, Tufan Al-Aqsa. October 7, 2023 will be a day to remember as a surprise that the Zionist enemy leadership never imagined possible. It was a morning nightmare for the Israeli entity brought to light by the Palestinian resistance with thunder-loud actions and unified voices. A unity that the leader of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, spoke extensively about just 4 days prior to Al-Aqsa flood operation during the Islamic Unity Conference in Iran. If the countries of West Asia are united together, which international power will be able to arrogantly plunder and interfere in the domestic and foreign affairs of the countries? Asked Sayyid Khamenei, adding that if countries like Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and countries surrounding the Persian Gulf like Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan follow a unified policy in basic and public issues, then the coercive powers cannot interfere in internal affairs and foreign policies as they are interfering now. Powerful, resonating words that were evident in every step taken by the resistance axis in West Asia and were loudly displayed during the recent Al-Aqsa flood operation, which was a culmination of the axis of resistance experience, steadfastness, and unity all put together to make sure the Palestinian resistance has within its hands the capabilities and the needed skills to astonish its friends and foes alike in a show of force and unity like no other in the history of the Arab-Israeli entity struggle since 1948. Welcome to a new era of resistance unity. I'm Marwa Osman. Of the Islamic Revolution, Sayyid Ali Khamenei said in his latest speech on October 3, 2023, today, U.S. strikes the countries of the region politically and economically, steals Syria's oil, protects and keeps the cruel, barbaric, and bloodthirsty Daesh in its camps so that it can be brought back to the field on the day of need and interferes in the affairs of the countries. But if everyone is united, if Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, and the Persian Gulf countries adopt a single policy in basic and general issues, the coercive powers cannot and do not dare to interfere in their internal affairs and foreign policy. We will be hosting today a number of activists and political commentators from the country Sayyid Ali Khamenei mentioned to discuss what unity means for the Arab and Islamic causes in West Asia. Beginning with our dear guest from California, Mr. Ali Al-Yami, Saudi activist and human rights advocate. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Al-Yami, especially at a very early hour of the day in California. Now, Mr. Al-Yami, what is your take on the calls issued by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, concerning uniting the positions and the stances on the West Asian countries in the face of what he called Western hegemony, especially with foreign policy issues?
Thank you for the invitation. The key word here is if. I wish that Arabs and Muslims are united around some principles, democratic principles, the human rights principles, equality for women and minorities.
Mr. Al-Yami, thank you very, very much. Mr. Ali Al-Yami from California, Saudi activist and human rights advocate, thank you very much for your time and your effort for being on our show now. We are now joined by Dr. Jamal Zahran, Political science professor at the Port Said University and Egypt coordinator of the Global Gathering in Support of the Choice of Resistance from Cairo. It's a pleasure having you on with us, Mr. Zahran. Now, Sayyid Ali Khamenei mentioned in his speech that the United States is behind the Takfiri groups in West Asia wreaking havoc and stealing the region's resources like that, for example, in Syria and Iraq. Now, for you, as an Egyptian politician and even former member of parliament, how do you assess the role of the United States in messing with the security and economy of West Asian countries?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. في الحقيقة طبعا يعني ما تفضل به
In the name of Allah, the Most Gracious, the Most Merciful. What Imam Khamenei said is completely correct. With regard to the necessity of describing the situation in the region and how to confront this American presence in Syria and Iraq and its influence in the Persian Gulf region and the Arab countries in general and the Middle East in a clearer and broader way. Saying that America is the initiator of terrorism in the region and the instigator of violence in the region is not wrong. Since its occupation of Iraq in 2003, the United States has continued as an occupation through huge military bases in Iraq and by exploiting the Syrian crisis, and even contributing to its fabrication, controlling oil sources, openly stealing oil and seizing agricultural lands for growing wheat. Consequently, the United States deprived Syria and its people of their resources, and thus contributed to the deliberate starvation of the Syrian people. This is an unforgivable crime, and there is no statute of limitations on it at all. This is a crime against humanity committed by the U.S. through the terrorist groups it created called Daesh. The name Daesh is essentially just a front to fragment the region from Syria to Iraq to Lebanon and Jordan and even to Saudi Arabia in the coming stage and other countries in the region. This is because all of these countries are targeted. Through this interview, we call for the necessity of unity of positions and pressure on the United States and the necessity of continuing resistance and attacking America's camps and private military bases there.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Jamal Zahran, political science professor at Port Said University and Egypt coordinator of the Global Gathering in Support of the Choice of Resistance, for joining us. And now we move on to our next guest from Latakia, the Syrian political commentator and journalist, Sara Saloum. It's always a pleasure having you on board. Sara, now, as a Syrian citizen suffering from unilateral punitive measures imposed by the United States of America simply because your country chose the path of resistance, how do you read the call of unity made by His Eminence Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution?
I support what Imam Khamenei said, saying that the United States of America is stealing our Syrian oil and keeping the criminal and terrorist Daesh ready to use it when needed. The most prominent evidence of the validity of this is what happened last week when the graduation ceremony of officer cadets at the military college in the Homs countryside was targeted. These young men were going to engage in the project to combat terrorism, the project to combat the Zionist enemy, and the project to combat federalization and division. This is a message to me and to the Syrian youth aiming at emptying the country of us towards immigration. You know that a large number of young Syrians have immigrated abroad in search of a better living situation as a result of the poor economic conditions due to the unilateral sanctions imposed by the United States of America on my country. From here, I also proceed to the validity of what Imam Khamenei suggested about the fact that if the major countries such as Iran, Saudi Arabia, and other Arab countries had taken a single united policy towards the basic issues or general issues, we would be in much better conditions today in the region.
No, and thank you very much, Ms. Sara Saloum, from Latakia in Syria, political commentator and journalist, for joining us to discuss this issue. Now we move on to our next guest from Tehran, Ms. Sitera Sadiqi, political commentator and co-host of Twice Told Tales podcast. Thanks a million for being with us, Sitera. Now, as an Iranian citizen living under constant Western threats, constant sanctions, and on many occasions also targeted harassment against the Islamic Republic of Iran by the United States of America and the Zionist entity as well, how do you assess the calls of unity made by Sayyid Ali Khamenei against the policy of divide and conquer, if I may, that our enemies have been implementing in West Asia to keep us divided.
Divide and conquer has always been the policy of the hegemon of the empire to maintain their influence and interference in our region, to keep their hands on our resources, to loot our resources. So what the leader of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, is referring to is actually the key to coming out of the various problems and chaos that we have been experiencing over decades in this region. If the nations in the region put their differences aside, their disagreements aside, and come together and adopt the same policy towards issues that affect all the nations in the region, if we stop, or if some of these nations stop stabbing Palestine in the back by normalizing relations with the Zionist regime, then we will start to see more of peace and stability and progress and development in our region. The Sykes-Picot agreement was meant to divide us, was meant to maintain certain disagreements and discords among different ethnicities. The borders were designed by France and Britain at that time to help Britain and France maintain their influence over this region. But we can overcome all these problems and issues by coming together, by getting united and understanding that no one from outside can solve our problems. It's only us and the nations of this region that can come together and overcome the problems and the issues that affect us all.
Definitely, Ms. Satera Sadiki, political commentator and co-host of Twice Told Tales podcast from Tehran. Thanks a million for being with us. Now, ladies and gents, please stay tuned, because next we'll be talking about how this unity was evident in the Battle of Al-Aqsa flood.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Now, Palestinian lions embraced jihad as a path of martyrdom and as a way of life for a nation, a people, and a homeland that was born again to the echo of battle and confrontations that brought down the dream of the so-called Greater Israel, with the fall of the Zionist army's deterrent power and killing normalization in its cradle. Now, Sayyid Ali Khamenei had always promised that Palestine will destroy the dream of the new American Middle East in the interest of liberating the nation and its peoples away from the colonialism of the West and its Zionist and reactionary tools. More details in the following report.
It was not an ordinary day, and it will not go unnoticed as a scene that neither the Israeli enemy nor the Zionist settlers are familiar with. October 7, 2023 was the day when the lions of the resistance emanated with their piercing roars, renewing the Battle of Bab Khaybar from the gate of the Gaza envelope, which they drew out of determination for victory. Thus, the Palestinian resistance charted a new victory that will represent a decisive turning point in the course of the confrontation with the Zionist enemy, which is fully aware of its danger. 4 days before the great Al-Aqsa flood, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei stated during the Islamic Unity Conference in Iran that the Palestinian Renaissance today is more active than at any time during the past 70 or 80 years. The Palestinian youth today and the Palestinian Renaissance against injustice, usurpation, and Zionism are more active, energetic, and ready than at any time. And you can see that. This Renaissance will achieve results, inshallah. The leader of the Islamic Revolution was right. 4 days later, we all saw Rather, the entire world saw what the Palestinian resistance was capable of. Once again, the prestige of an army that was said to be invincible has now been completely shattered. It was unable to protect the herds of its settlers, and it fell into a new kind of confrontation in which truth confronts falsehood, where the owners of the land confront the tyrannical immigrants from all corners of the earth who came to build a homeland on the ruins of a displaced people with international complicity and regional official betrayal. Reactionary regimes and kings of apostasy came to the table of high treason to normalize relations with the Israeli entity and sell the Palestinian cause in the international slave market to protect the privileges of ruling families and dynasties that are the deposits of colonialism and its tools in the body of the nation. However, the nation awoke from its slumber after a long night of submission, shadowed by the darkness of betrayal that befell the regimes of the nation. The October sun rises, a resistance that inflames the heat of a struggling people who chose the gun as a way of life, wrote pages inked with the blood of martyrs who believed in their Lord and were loyal to their cause, not tempted by power or wealth. They did not wait for normalization that would perpetuate betrayal. So they embraced jihad as a path and martyrdom, as a way of life for a nation, a people, and a homeland that was born again.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Amman, Jordan, is Mr. Muwaffaq Mahadeen, political writer and commentator. It's a pleasure having you with us, Mr. Muwaffaq Mahadeen. Now, in your opinion, after witnessing the historic October 7, 2023 Al-Aqsa flood operation in the Gaza enclave, in your opinion, how can unifying the Arab position contribute to supporting the Palestinian cause, especially during these extraordinary times?
In the beginning, the birth of the Palestinian issue was in Arab and international forums, came with more Arab support than it was born through a purely Palestinian decision. We know that the Palestine Liberation Organization, headed by Ahmed al-Shuairi, was practically established with the support of President Jamal Abdel Nasser, who also secured recognition of the Palestinian entity in the Arab summits. It is difficult to talk about a unified Arab position on the Palestinian issue in view of the objective reality itself and in view of its political, social, and intellectual expressions, which are different expressions depending on the social nature and political relations of this regime or that. It is difficult to talk about a unified Arab position in light of the objective reality, which is a problematic reality. And it is difficult to ignore it or maybe just wait for better approaches in the near future. I believe that the Palestinians, of course, who assert their right to their entire land, have only one choice, which is to be part of the known axis of resistance.
Well, I want to thank you really very much, Mr. Muwaffaq Mahadeen, political writer and commentator, who joined us from Amman, Jordan, to discuss this very important issue. Now, joining us from Baghdad is Sheikh Dr. Yusuf Al-Nasiri, assistant to the Secretary General of the Al-Nujaba Movement and Iraq's General Coordinator of the Global Gathering in Support of the Choice of Resistance. It's a pleasure always having you with us, Sheikh Nasiri. Now, Iraq has been suffering the most over the past two decades from constant Western looting and destruction in ways that have rendered the Iraqi state basically incapable of securing the livelihoods of the Iraqi public. Do you think calls of unity like what we heard coming from the latest speech by Sayyid Ali Khamenei can find Arab ears maybe to listen to it and take the advice?
In the name of Allah, the most merciful, the most gracious. And may the peace and blessings be upon the last of all the prophets and messengers, Muhammad. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless him and grant him peace. From the scope of Imam Khamenei's last speech, in which he stated that our wealth is still coveted by invaders and enemies, and therefore it behooves us as a nation to have this great Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, whom Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala chose and selected as the most honorable honorable of Allah's creation, so that He is the most honorable of His creation, and His nation is the best and most honorable of nations. This has several pillars. Among these pillars are independence, sovereignty, lack of fear towards others, unity, and the ability to use wealth. This is what the greatest prophet did when he united the nation after it had been fighting among family, tribe, clan, and peoples, and made of them a harmonious, united nation that leads the features of morals, science, and knowledge to the world. Today we are called upon once again to unite our ranks, align ourselves, invest our wealth, prevent our enemy from exploiting us, and to make this nation a nation that exudes the scent of science, knowledge, technology, and development. And here we are, and by Allah's blessings upon us, we have great leaders like Imam Khamenei, asking Allah, glory be to Allah, to inspire him and our revolutionaries and fighters in all parts of this Arab and Islamic world. For more struggle, unity and jihad, for more rationality and knowledge. God willing, we will see successive victories until they are linked to the owner of the Renaissance and the owner of justice and the divine promise, Imam Mahdi. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala Almighty hasten His honorable appearance. Peace, mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Dr. Yusuf Al-Nasiri, Assistant to the Secretary General of the Al-Nujaba Movement and Iraq's General Coordinator of the Global Gathering in Support of the Choice of Resistance, for your time with us, Mawlana. Now, finally, we are joined with Dr. Bilal Laqis, academic and political researcher from Beirut, Lebanon, to discuss the latest events and the call of unity in West Asia. Dr. Laqis, it's a pleasure for us to have you on board now. No doubt what we witnessed yesterday and the day before on the Gaza front was beyond what words could ever describe. But all in all, it truly was a flood, and I mean that. How do you see the Arab and Islamic joint position concerning the Palestinian resistance in light of the calls issued by His Eminence Sayyid Ali Khamenei to unite the front against Western hegemony, Western aggression, Zionist aggression and hegemony as well, especially in our region?
In the da'wah that
the call made by the Islamic Republic of Iran and the leader of the Islamic Revolution on the issue of unity between our countries and our societies appears, especially in these exceptional circumstances and stages in the history of the Arab and Islamic nation, to be an extremely realistic and extremely rational call that achieves all interests. This means that it is not only a moral call, despite the importance and necessity of moral discourse and our constant need for it, but also in many moments when we talk about issues of unity today. We do not talk about complete fusion, because then the idea of unity no longer has any meaning. Here we are talking about the required limit at this stage that achieves the interests of everyone and that prevents the ability of outsiders to influence the internal policies of our countries in a way that serves the interests of the outsiders. I believe that this geographical region, given its religious Arab affiliation and the intertwining of the issue of resistance with its geography, culture and structure, I believe that Imam Khamenei's call in this sense is a very realistic call and one that achieves the interests of each of these countries. From here, we see that the call to formulate a goal under the title of a contractual will to integrate among each other in order to create a minimum level of common interest is extremely important today, especially since we are living in exceptional circumstances and the world is going through transformations, and therefore it is not possible to confront the transformations of the world alone. This unity also adds great value, especially since today we are living one of the greatest and most beautiful days of our nation in its struggle against its Israeli enemy. It has become clear today that the nation, the resistance discourse, and the resistant people in our Arab and Islamic nation possesses the potential and capabilities. In this sense, I want to say that yes, what is happening today in Palestine is an indication that part of this resistance can achieve a big day for the nation and restore to it a large part of its identity, which was cracked, torn and disintegrated at one stage. So this proposal that Imam Khamenei presents with insight, awareness and understanding of the circumstance and a vision that expresses a stage of openness that we are living through. Hence, we must resolve our differences to continue moving on, because it is the urgent need today, and any other proposal proposal that has to do with seeking help from the Israeli occupation entity and seeking help from the U.S. is a proposal that is out of time as well as out of place. And whoever follows this doctrine is wrong, and he is the one who will lose and pay a heavy price in all cases.
Well, I want to thank you very much for your contribution, Dr. Bilal Lais, academic and political researcher from Beirut, Lebanon, for joining us and being the final crème de la crème, if I may, at the end of this show today, speaking about the unity calls made by His Eminence Sayyid Ali Khamenei for the West Asian countries to come together, especially in these extraordinary times. Ladies and gents, I want to thank you very much for being with us. I want to congratulate the Muslim Ummah, the Arab Ummah, the Palestinian, what can I say except heroes, for what they have presented for their cause and what kind of hope that they gave us against the Israeli entity and our fight against the Israeli entity. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you again next week, inshallah, for more updates from West Asia right here on the Mideast Stream.
Limelight. President Joe Biden has been interviewed in a special counsel investigation into classified documents found at his office and home. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden has been interviewed by the Office of Special Counsel Robert Hur, who is overseeing an inquiry related to the discovery of documents with classification markings at Joe Biden's Wilmington home and former private office. Ian Sams, the spokesman for the White House Counsel's Office, said in a statement that the interview was conducted at the White House over 2 days, on Sunday, 8th of October, and Monday, 9th of October. It was concluded on Monday, he said. Ian Sams went on to state that the President and White House are cooperating with the probe. Other questions were referred to the Justice Department. Multiple sources confirmed to CBS News that Robert Hur personally conducted the interview with the President.